Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for home theater geeks is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Home Theater Geeks with Scott Wilkinson, recorded January 2nd, 2012, episode 93, A New Year with the Chat Room. Hey there, Scott Wilkinson here, online editor of HomeTheater.com. Happy New Year to one and all. This week's guest geek is David Vaughn, my colleague at HomeTheater.com. He writes product reviews and movie reviews and our ultimate demo blog, which I'm sure we'll talk a little bit about during the next hour. Hey, David, welcome to the show.
Hey, Scott, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you. Those who are tuned into the chat room or tuned into the live video stream at live.twit.tv or logged into the chat room at irc.twit.tv can post questions for David and me. In fact, that's what we're going to be focusing on this hour, is answering chat room questions. So I sure hope that you will post some for us. We'll be able to answer anything, almost anything, I should say, regarding home theater, big screen TVs, surround sound, Blu-ray, streaming video, AV receivers. What should you buy? How should you set it up? What are you having problems with that we might be able to help you with? All these kinds of questions we'd be very happy to talk about. So, David, let's see. You've been reviewing a lot of AV receivers lately, haven't you?
Yes, three in a row, in fact, starting in late October. And I just was able to put my regular pre-pro back in the rack this past weekend. So a lot of demos.
Yeah, exactly. Any of them stand out as being particularly good?
Well, all of them. I mean, they're all in the $1,000 and up range, $1,000 to $2,000 range. So when you're in that price range, you're really splitting hairs. Is something being bad or not? None of them are really bad. Some are better than others. The first one I reviewed was the Onkyo TX-NR 1009, mm-hmm. which is $1,399. Has great video processing, great audio quality. It was probably my favorite of all of them as a well-rounded unit. Mm-hmm. Next in was a Sony DA5700ES, which is the most unique AVR I've ever used. From the standpoint, it's the first to incorporate video streaming inside the box, so to speak.
AVRs generally don't have video streaming incorporated into them?
No, they'll have audio streaming, but this is the first I've seen with video streaming. This had Netflix, Hulu Plus, YouTube, for whatever that's worth, Vudu, all built into the box, which is a nice thing. They had an interesting way to get through everything. Everything was activity-based, similar to a Harmony remote.
Oh, cool.
So that was a nice piece, but its video processing was somewhat antiquated. It refused to process any HDMI signals. Mm. So that was common 3-4 years ago, not as common today. Mm. At least, you know, again, when you get in the $1,000 and up range. And then the last one I had on my system was the Yamaha RXA-1010, which is probably the best sounding, not probably, it was the best sounding unit of the three. But its user interface was a little clunky and its video processing wasn't the greatest in the world. You have to step up in price class for them to get some HDX. Not HDX, I'm thinking of Vudu, of slipping my mind, Scott, help me out here.
Video processing.
Video processing. I'm trying to think of the solution, but it's not coming to mind right now.
HQV.
HQV, that's it.
Okay, HQV, all right.
Processing in that unit. Yeah. In their two higher-end units does have HQV. This one does not.
I gotcha. Okay. All right. Well, we're starting to get some questions in the chat room, so let's get right to them. F-Loop asks, is judder-free 24 FPS presentation possible on any modern TV? What does it take to do it? I would have to say probably not.
No. I mean, frame interpolation will help, but
yes.
you get kind of a funky, you don't mind the video soap opera-ish look. I do.
Yes. Most people do. I have to say I'm in the minority on that, and I'll admit it.
Yeah. It will help, but I mean, at 24 frames per second, judder's just kind of built into it, especially on fast-moving shots and such.
Exactly, which is why James Cameron and Peter Jackson and directors like that are all kind of advocating for 48 frames per second or 60 frames per second, shooting the movies at those higher speeds. Of course, that would require new projectors in the theaters, new TVs, generally speaking.
Yeah, well, the Hobbits being filmed 48 frames per second for 3D.
Well, which is very interesting, but it's still going to be 24 frames per eye, right?
That I don't know. I just saw 48 frames. I don't know what type of conversion. Supposedly, the Sony 4K projector that's starting to land in theaters or is in theaters now is going to be firmware updatable to run at 48 frames per second.
Ah, interesting. Well, firmware updatability is actually a great thing, and I did have a question here on somebody asked something about that. Beatmaster. Wasn't there a good reason not to implement video streaming content that takes even more firmware updates, I suppose? Are receivers, you've just reviewed three receivers we were talking about. Do they typically have firmware updatability?
Yes, all three of them, in fact, have firmware updates why I have them in my system. So they were all, network capable, so it's not difficult to do. The only one that had an issue connecting was the Onkyo, and I was able to update it by downloading the firmware onto a USB stick and took 15 minutes and everything was said and done.
Yeah, but still, I'd rather have it be connected online and just have the download come straight into it, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I mean, it's supposed to do that, but for whatever reason, it wouldn't do it through my network. So it's good to have the fallback to be able to go to their website and download something.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. Strengths asks, is there any real reason to brand match receivers with TVs or speaker systems? What do you think?
No, I don't think so.
I don't either.
I mean, it's funny. In my first draft of the Sony review, I actually wrote that at one time in the 90s, my entire system was Sony, everything except the speakers. But I had a Sony VCR, a Sony DVD player, a Sony TV. And then somewhere along the line, they lost me as a customer. Probably, the biggest reason I stopped shopping in the big boxes for my stuff and, moved to brands like Onkyo and Denon and Harman Kardon and those type of things. And not that Sony makes bad products. It's just they didn't cater to the places I shopped, so to speak.
Right.
And I became a fan of other products, and I've since used those products I've been a fan of Onkyo for more than 10 years now. I've always seemed to have one of their products in my rack.
Sure. I'd have to agree that brand matching isn't very important, especially these days. There might be some argument for it in terms of what's called HDMI CEC, or Consumer Electronics Control. Each company has their own name for this, and it's supposed to allow interoperability in a way such that when you turn on the AV receiver, the Blu-ray player and the TV will turn on also and switch to the right inputs and so on. But if you go cross-brand, that typically is very limited what it can do. But if you go within a brand, there's often more that the manufacturer has built in to automate along this way. It's the only reason I can think of that you might want to stay within a brand. But otherwise, I don't really see any reason to.
It's funny you mentioned that, because when I was all Sony, they had their S-Link, which would connect by a little mono, mini cable, and it would do the same thing, where if you pushed a tape in the VCR, it would turn on the TV and turn the TV to the proper input. And that was one of the reasons why I had it, because I had young kids at the time, and if they wanted to watch a tape, they knew they could go over to the TV and put the tape in and everything would play how they wanted it to.
Right, which is a great thing if you can swing it. The Logitech
right.
Harmony remote tries to do that in a certain way by automating, when you say, I want to watch a movie, it turns the TV to the right input, the receiver to the right input, starts the Blu-ray player going or whatever. and HDMI CEC is supposed to do that, but I haven't seen it fully work entirely well. Like,
no, when I get a new piece, I disable it. I don't even try. That's what universal remotes are made for.
Right, right. Web3786 asks, do we really even need receivers anymore? Since everything is all HDMI, can't we just get a preamp for the TV output to hook up to the speakers? Well, you'd hook that up to a power amp and then to the speakers. But what do you think? Do we still need receivers anymore?
At this point, yes, but I'm waiting for somebody to come out with just a simplified amplifier box with HDMI switching on it with a minimal decoder. A company like Oppo could do something like that, I think, pretty easily.
Sort of like an integrated amp used to be. Remember stereo integrated amps?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That just didn't have a radio tuner or a lot of stuff in it. Just had a preamp and a power amp built into one box. What you're talking about would be sort of like that, but with a bunch of HDMI inputs.
Right, HDMI inputs and an Ethernet port. So, I mean, I don't even use AM/FM anymore. I just hook up a squeeze box and stream.
Right.
Just easier to do that, to listen to what I want to. You look at the back of a modern AV receiver, there's more connections there that you're not going to use 95% of them.
That's right.
I can swap a piece out now very, very simply. I mean, I have a coax connection, a stereo connection from the squeeze box, and everything else is HDMI.
Exactly. Now, people still have VCRs and, that'd be about the only thing I can think of that might still be legacy, turntable perhaps. But people who have turntables these days are typically audiophiles, and they're going to have a special turntable preamp and separate stuff. So and also AV receivers, I don't know about the ones you just reviewed, but more and more I'm starting to see that they don't have S-video inputs, for example.
The Yamaha did have S-video inputs, but a lot of them don't have S-video inputs anymore.
Those legacy connectors are disappearing.
Yeah, yeah. And frankly, as they should. I mean, it's just it's time to move on. And maybe the manufacturers could put them in one of their lines, but even that's difficult to do because they share so many parts. You look at the high-end models of a company, you look at the three high-end models, they all have a similar chassis to them because the economies of scale say they need to do that.
Web 5153 asks, why is there a buzzing noise coming from my Vizio TV? It's my first LCD TV. Do they all sound like this in a quiet room? I'd have to know a little bit more about that, Web 5153. If you've got the volume turned way up, that might be possible. I have heard of buzzing noise from plasma, but not from LCD.
I haven't heard from LCD either.
Yeah, exactly.
I have a Vizio plasma and it buzzes. Quiet passages, you can hear it.
Yeah, a lot of plasmas do. More so when you're up high. You're not up high. You're close to sea level, I think.
Right.
But if you get up to at altitude, you can have that kind of a problem. Let's see. Midnight Rider asks if you've reviewed any electrostatic speakers down to 4 or less ohms. I know you don't review speakers too much, but your speakers that you use in your system are 4-ohm speakers, right?
Yes, they're 4-ohm M&K studio monitors, S150s across the front, and then SS150s, 4 of them in the rear.
So you have 7.1?
7.1, correct. Mm-hmm. I'd like to move to 9.1, but my wife will throw me out of the house if I try and put more speakers in the room.
There's that spouse acceptance factor again.
Yes.
Now, if you were to move to 9.1... Would you install extra really wide speakers or height speakers?
I've heard that width speakers tend to have a better effect. They make the surround pans more seamless. Mm-hmm. Height would be easier to integrate, though. So I'm not sure. I would have to do some testing both ways to see what I could figure out.
Yeah.
A sound mixer I know says that you would be better off actually having a rear height speaker.
Well, that's interesting. Why?
To create, it would just be used more. The movie with Mel Gibson where he's in Vietnam, I'm trying to remember the name of it. They actually mixed it with a height speaker in mind. And if you listen to the 7.1 mix or the 5.1 mix with the 7.1 matrix, it sounds like helicopters are hovering overhead. And they intentionally did that. But I can't seem to recall the name of the movie. It was years ago that I watched it. Maybe the chat room. We were soldiers. Thank you, Zero Neuro and King Crayley 20.
Very good.
Yeah, the chat room. Soldiers.
The chat room is great. They are definitely my brain and Leo's brain and anybody's brain who does this. So thank you, chat room.
Yeah.
Jay Guest says he has an LG 55-inch 480-hertz TV with all the bells and whistles. He wants a good and affordable sound alternative. Now, I assume that means, Jay Guest, from an alternative to the speakers built into the TV, which you're correct in looking for.
Yeah.
Because I don't think that I've heard any TV sound system that sounds any good at all. Obviously, the best thing to do first, I think, would be to get a full surround system. But barring that, a sound bar, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, sound bar if your room is symmetrical. The sound bars don't seem to work real good in wide, spacious areas. But if you have a square, rectangular room, they work really, really well. I mean, better than they should. They really do. I've heard some that you would be convinced there were surround speakers and they aren't there, but you're in a perfectly shaped room for that. If you had a wide open back area, you know, like a living room or family room setting with a kitchen behind, I'm not sure how well that would work. The soundbar would still be an upgrade. Definitely.
It would still be an upgrade to the speakers in the TV. But as you say, it depends on the room, how much better it'll be.
Right, exactly.
Jim Four asks, how do you calibrate a Samsung 3D HD TV? Would it be very difficult? Well, it depends on what you mean by calibration, right?
Yeah, I mean, if you want to do your user-level calibration, I found the best user-level disc is probably the Disney Wow disc because they offer the three different levels of calibration, beginning, intermediate, and expert. And it explains things very clearly in layman's terms. And that'll get you, I mean, Scott and I, we've talked about this before, probably 75, 80% of the way there.
Yep.
If you want to go above and beyond that, you could go to Calman and purchase a meter, a spectral radiometer, and their software for a few hundred dollars.
Well, and the spectral radiometer is another few hundred dollars.
Yeah, it's probably $500 total, but
at minimum, you have it. And you can go way up from there.
Yeah, you could go way above that.
You also have to get the training to use them properly.
True, although if you understand how colors work and you do enough reading on the internet, you could figure out how to do it. There's actually some pretty good walkthroughs that I've found online that are pretty well done, either at AVS forums. There's some there. Calman offers their own. They now have their auto calibration if your TV is one of those. I haven't been able to test that. I'm going to go over to a friend's house who has a new Panasonic and see how well the auto calibration works versus my standalone calibration on his display.
Right.
But, I mean, just using like the Disney Wow Disc or Spears and Munsell, you set the brightness, contrast, color, and your
sharpness,
your sharpness properly, you're going to have a pretty good looking TV.
Yeah, and as good 80% of the way there, at least for what that TV can do.
Correct.
Yeah,
and then
yeah.
if you want to take it to the next level, then you're going to be spending some money, or you can hire a calibrator to come in and do it.
Right, which is several hundred dollars.
Correct.
But that'll get you all the way to where that to the absolute best that TV can produce.
Definitely. Yeah, definitely. And you also, I mean, some people may be satisfied with 80% as well. Probably
yeah, exactly.
not watch the show, but, you know.
Now, I want to also, he mentioned one thing. He has a 3D TV. And I want to mention just briefly that if you're going to do a full calibration, you need to calibrate the 3D mode separately. Because things are so different when you wear those glasses.
Yeah, well, in my case, I have a JVC 3D projector, mm-hmm. and the glasses actually add a green tint. So when you calibrate, you have to actually calibrate the your final setting is way too blue if you looked at it without glasses. But when you put the glasses on, it looks right.
Right. So and so when you calibrate it like that, you actually have to put the glasses in front of your meter, right?
Correct. Correct. To where it will take account for what that tint is on those glasses.
Right.
It's not a lot of fun calibrating for 3D.
I have to agree. And yet, as the viewers, we have to do it.
Yes. And it takes it goes from a one-man job to a two-man job.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, because you have to have somebody up there holding those up to the screen, especially if it's a front projector. You may get away with it a little easier if you're on a a regular display, but a front projector, your meters are far away from where you're calibrating from to where your head doesn't get in the way of the beam of light.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, Tom and I have figured out a way to actually use gaffer's tape and tape the glasses onto the meter.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So we can actually do it by ourselves, but you're right. It's a pain in the butt. So
yep.
I don't recommend that people do it unless they're super geeky and want to get into it that level. Here's a great question from Ken Crayley, who says he's heard that from some journalists that Blu-ray will get passed over one day by digital downloads. And Blu-ray, of course, he thinks, and I agree, is the best quality to watch movies, and it'll be a long time before that really happens. What do you think?
I look at it this way. I mean, for a time, DVD was the utmost quality. I mean, it was it. And then Blu-ray came along and kind of knocked it off its perch. And now streaming is here. But streaming really, even the best streaming, is marginally better than DVD quality. I mean, you take even Vudu HDX downloads, which look pretty darn good on a regular size display. You blow them up on a projector, you can tell that it's streaming. I think what will happen as technology goes along, Blu-ray may or may not be the last physical format, but 4K is on the horizon. Do we get a 4K physical format? And then does the pipeline get big enough that streaming becomes Blu-ray quality? I mean, predicting the future is too hard to do. There's a lot of people that predict all kinds of things, and they're wrong every year. So I mean, I enjoy Blu-ray for what it is. It's great. I enjoy streaming for what it is. I mean, there's some shows that I don't need the best quality. I mean, recently I streamed some old episodes of Cheers on Amazon Video On Demand. I don't need to watch Cheers in 1080p video. That's not what they're watching it for. And so it was fine. That being said, I'm real interested to see how Star Trek The Next Generation looks later this month when they release the Blu-ray of, four episodes that were completely remastered. I'm real curious if they look as good as the original series did, because supposedly CBS is going to drop millions of dollars to make these look great, and we're going to see them on Blu-ray.
And the amazing thing is that the original series was released on Blu-ray, and it looks fantastic.
It does. It looks amazing. You and I have talked about this many times. I mean, you can tell when there's a mannequin lane in the scene that you couldn't tell
watching
a standard definition video. It looked like a real person, but no, it's a mannequin.
It's a mannequin, and it looks so much like a mannequin in high def. It's like, this is the reason why newscasters didn't want to go to high def, because all of their little facial imperfections will now be perfectly visible.
Yep. Well, I find it funny. Some actresses are actually having their faces altered in post because they don't want their blemishes to show up, and they can go through and basically DNR one person in the scene. And it's distracting when you're watching a movie and you see, Owen Wilson, and he looks like Owen Wilson, and then they switch to Jennifer Aniston, and Jennifer Aniston looks all smooth. Smooth than she should. And that was written into the contract, and Owen Wilson just doesn't care.
By the way, for those who don't know, DNR is digital noise reduction, which is, I suppose, the process they would use to smooth out somebody's face.
Yep.
Let's see here. Gardner just pointing out that The Hobbit is using two red cameras, which are 4K cameras, one for each eye, I guess, along with mirrors to do 48 on each side. So they're doing 48 frames per second for each eye. So according to Gardner, anyway. So if that's true, and we have digital cinema projectors that can do that, that can do 48 hertz per eye, it should look phenomenal.
It should. And I'm curious how they're going to translate that onto Blu-ray. I mean, obviously, they'll probably just encode a 1080p 24 and go from there. I don't think the Blu-ray spec can support 48 frames.
I don't think it can. Not at 1080p anyway.
No.
Exactly. Knox Harrington asks, do we expect HDTV prices to decline now that the Christmas season is over? They were already really low for the Christmas buying season.
Yeah, they always tend to go down a little bit more right before Super Bowl. It's kind of like just, their last push. And some of the new year models, depending on the manufacturer, come out in the spring. So they're trying to liquidate inventory and, to get for the next round. They are insanely cheap. I was in Costco the other day and they had a 50-inch Panasonic 1080p plasma for $799. I was just blown away by the price.
Was it a 50-inch?
50-inch. It was the 50S model.
Right. In fact, Finlay09 asks about that very model. I did give a very good rating to the S30, and he asks how I would rate it against the ST30, which is the 3D version. I know you probably haven't seen those models in any great detail.
No, you and Tom generally hog all the displays. So,
well, all the flat panels anyway.
Yeah.
Well, I will say this in response to the question: the S30 and the ST30. Are essentially identical. The only difference is that the ST30 has 3D capabilities and the S30 does not. So,
do they use the same screen?
Sorry?
Do they have the same screen material? Because somebody in the chat room asked that. I've seen it scroll up a couple times. Whether the ST and the S use the same screen. Has
as far as I know, they do. I mean, I don't know that for a fact. I didn't ask Panasonic, and I didn't actually, take it apart and look and see. But, they measured essentially the same. They looked essentially the same. They had the same streaming content available to them on their in their app store or whatever. In my mind, they're essentially identical. Only one is 3D and one is not. It depends on whether or not you want 3D or not. And, Leo and I talk about this all the time, that he does not dig 3D. He just thinks it's a gimmick. He doesn't like it. Whereas I like it when it's done well.
Right.
Now, you actually, I think, are a convert, aren't you?
I was, when I first got a 3D projector, my wife really wanted the 3D glasses, and so we got them. I just didn't think they were worth the $800 for four pairs of glasses, but we got them.
That's pretty high, yeah.
It is high, and they're active glasses, and they'll last for a long time, and 3D's neat, but my thing is if a movie is bad, it doesn't matter whether it's 3D or 2D. It's still a bad movie. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the trap that Hollywood has fallen into is they take a crappy movie and they slap a 3D moniker on it and do it in post-production and end up with a crappy-looking, crappy 3D movie. And it's no wonder that less and less consumers are going to 3D movies because they've killed the golden goose. People saw Avatar. They loved Avatar. Avatar looked great. But
Avatar cost, what, $200 million to make or more?
Exactly. And everything since Avatar has not looked as good as Avatar.
Well, I'm not sure I would agree with that. Many things didn't. I know you don't go out to the movies much. You wait for the Blu-ray for the most part. But I have to tell you, we just went and saw The Adventures of Tintin, which is an animated movie, uses a lot of motion capture. The animation is phenomenal. The 3D I thought was great, really spectacular. I thought Hugo in 3D looked great too. Leo did not. We talked about this on the radio show last Sunday that he just thought it was a gimmick and not very good. And okay, fine. He just doesn't like 3D. He should not go see 3D.
Yeah, but, I mean, animated, every animated 3D I've seen looks real good. I mean, the old Toy Stories, even Toy Story 1 looks good in 3D. Toy Story 3 looks amazing in 3D because there's more level of detail in the animation itself. That's a different story. That's you know, that's all bits. It's already bits. They can go in, they can add a second camera in where it needs to be and re-render everything to get your 3D. But taking Clash of the Titans and making it 3D did not make Clash of the Titans a good movie. it just doesn't do it.
Well, and when I talked to Phil McNally on the radio show when I was subbing for Leo on Christmas Eve, Phil McNally is the stereographer at DreamWorks Animation. I said, you know, what about conversions? You know, why don't they usually work very well? And he said, well, if you take the time and you spend the money that you need to make them work well, they can. But it takes a lot of time and a lot of money. So conversions often don't look good because the studios don't take the time and money to do it.
Well, you know what? That being said, Captain America was done in 3D that way, and it actually looked pretty good, at least on Blu-ray. I'm not sure how it looked on the big screen. But the 3D of Captain America, I actually thought it was probably the best conversion that I'd seen. Did it look as good as Avatar? No, but they are closing the gap a little bit. I'm curious to see how Star Wars, The Phantom Menace, looks when that gets released, because they're supposedly taking a lot of time with that to make it look right.
And Titanic as well.
Correct. Yeah, Titanic should be interesting.
Right.
Although, again, exactly. I'm not sure if seeing Titanic in 3D really adds much. I mean, I like the movie, don't get me wrong, but, you know, it's why is this in 3D, you know?
Well, you know, I don't know. We'll see. I mean, obviously, Cameron is big on 3D, so yep. I'm sure he'll do it right. If whatever he does, I'm sure he'll do it right.
I agree.
Let's see here. David Bix asks, is there an amp I can get to power a 3-ohm, 40-watt, 100-hertz subwoofer from an old HTIB to use with my Onkyo AVR that only has a subwoofer pre-out? Or do I have to get a powered subwoofer?
You can get a power amp and hook a power amp up to that.
3-ohm subwoofer, that seems, and 40 watts, that seems kind of low for a subwoofer.
Yeah.
I don't know. HTIBs typically, you know, their speaker system is meant to be used with that system. So using it with another system is not something I normally recommend.
And generally speaking, your home theater in the box, the speakers are the cheapest component that are in there, and they don't
yes.
last forever.
Right.
The AVR that it comes with or packaged with is a decent AVR, and at some point you're going to want to upgrade your speakers because they use paper cones and they break down and they get dusty and brittle and they blow out real easy, especially if you have teenage kids.
Which you now do.
Yes. And by the time you buy an amp to power that, you'd be better off going to, you know, HSU or SVS and just buying one of their entry level subs, and your performance is going to be way beyond what came with that home theater in the box.
I couldn't agree more. Yeah.
Your entry level sub may cost more than the home theater in the box. But look up a Polk, you know, like a Polk subwoofer that can use the subwoofer line out. You know, whenever somebody comes to me and says, okay, I want a surround sound system, the very first question I ask is, what is your budget? And then I will cater a system to their budget. That way they get what they want, which is a surround sound, and they get the best quality components based upon their budget. Because as you go up, as you know, you could spend a lot of money.
Yes.
A lot of money.
A lot of money. Let's see. Strengths asks, are there specialized materials available for walls to prevent reflecting sounds? Or is that quilt you have up good enough? The quilt sitting behind me is actually in my dining room. And what he's really asking about is acoustic treatments.
Yes. My room's acoustically treated, and it's the biggest probably bang for your buck you can do in your room if you do it right. The key, I did it because I had horrendous slap echo, and by treating the room, I got rid of the slap echo. It creates a flatter frequency response. Soundtracks don't sound as bright. And dialogue reproduction actually is vastly improved from that.
And the company you used was GIK Acoustics, I think,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, GIK Acoustics. They were real helpful. I sent them pictures and drawings of my room saying, okay, this is what I would like to do. What do you suggest? And they came back with their suggestion, and they were right. I mean, it did make the room sound better.
Yeah.
I mean, I would love to have a dedicated room, but I got to get a couple kids through college first before I can think about doing that.
Ken Crayley asks, what Blu-rays are we looking forward to in 2012?
Blu-ray discs?
Yeah, Blu-ray discs.
Indiana Jones is supposed to be coming in 2012. Jaws in 2012. Everything released in 2011 in the theaters should be on Blu-ray. Indiana Jones are probably the two biggest. I've heard rumors of Titanic coming in 2012. I mean, we're at the 6-year point of Blu-ray. We're getting to the point where pretty much everything is going to be on Blu-ray. If it sold anything on DVD, I mean, heck, you can go on Amazon right now. I think you can buy Terminator 2 for $5.49 on Amazon for the Blu-ray, which, yeah. I mean, it's mass market, which is good. I mean, there was a time when we wondered whether it was ever going to get to mass market, but it did get to mass market.
And now, of course, we're wondering whether or not it's going to survive in the face of online streaming, which we talked about earlier.
Yeah, and even with online streaming, if you look at the revenue streams of online streaming versus Blu-ray still blows it away by the numbers.
Yeah.
And with the ISP starting to throttle people, if you get more than 250 gigabytes a month.
Which is just a few movies at most.
Well, depending on what type of movies. I mean, if you're streaming like a Vudu HDX, yeah. I mean, one of those movies, I think, is around 15 gigs.
Man.
So. Yeah, I mean, you just look at the bit rates and do the math. If it's a 2-hour movie and you're streaming it at 7 or 8 megabits per second, that's going to add up to a lot of gigabytes in time.
Yep.
And if you're a heavy streamer, you're going to get throttled, and then your fast internet connection's not going to be so fast, or they're going to shut you down because they think you're pirating movies.
Web4319 asks, do we really need LFE, low frequency effects, the subwoofer channel, to reach down to 22 hertz for movie watching? Is it really that necessary?
I think so. I mean, when they encode the disc, that 0.1 channel is there for a reason. I mean, really, it's allowed us to not use full range speakers because we can take the taxing of those speakers off by taking those low frequency effects and sending them to the subwoofer. So in my opinion, yes.
And certainly there is plenty of content on many movies, not all movies, but many movies, certainly action adventure movies, dinosaurs, rocket ships, earthquakes, explosions. They all have frequency components down in that range.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely so. I mean, and sometimes they overcook that range.
Yeah.
Over Christmas, I watched my favorite Christmas movie, Die Hard. And that movie, the bass is just so intense. You know, the sound mixer just kind of took the LFE channel and bumped it up a little bit because the gunshots are way over the top.
Right. Now, you know, often
I like it.
Yeah. Now, in your blog called Ultimate Demos on hometheater.com, you often talk about, room-shaking bass. So it's clearly something that's important.
Oh, definitely. I mean, there's if you go into any of the subwoofer threads on AVS or Blu-ray.com or whatever, there will be a litany of movies with what's the best bass scene of movies, and there'll be lists there, just kind of like an Ultimate Demo with the timestamp. You know, if you really want the windows to go to, an hour and 2 minutes and 38 seconds, and just wait. Here it comes.
Here it comes. Right. Cass asks, do you have to do a calibration for every input? And Jim Four asks a related question. Is it really important to calibrate at all? We talked about that earlier. Just doing a simple setup will get you 80% of the way there. And if you want to do the full calibration, that'll get you the extra 20%. What about calibrating separate inputs?
For me, I calibrate my Blu-ray input because to me, that's the most important thing that I watch. And then I will take those settings and I will transfer them to anything else I have, whether it's a TiVo or anything else in my system. Because for my TiVo, it may not be perfect, but it's good enough. It's close enough for normal TV watching. And there isn't anyone who comes over to my house and says, boy, your TV really looks bad. You know,
whatever. Yeah, I'm sure that's true. Midnight Rider says, are they blowing out the displays now because 4K is around the corner? I don't think so.
No, they're blowing out the displays because they want to sell more displays next year.
Right.
You know,
right.
The TV
manufacturers are operating on razor-thin margins.
Yes, definitely.
Seriously razor-thin margins. But 4K, I mean, we are going to see 4K at CES. I have no doubt of that whatsoever. But the big problem is content. And we talked about that a little while ago. How are you going to get 4K content to the consumer for their new 4K displays? You're not
for a while. Now, some premium Onkyo, or actually even the Onkyo 1009 that I reviewed, actually has 4K upscaling in it. HQV right. will provide 4K upscaling. I wasn't able to test that because I don't have a 4K display. But you're going to start seeing it in some higher-end components. And like everything else, it will start to trickle down into the more affordable range. And then it'll end up in Best Buy.
Right. At some point. Again, on razor-thin margins.
Exactly.
I'm just going to quickly answer Davey49's question. Are we going to start testing more budget equipment, TVs under 1,000, AVRs under 500? We've actually started doing that already. We've got several AVRs under $500. And yes, I do intend to do some reviews of TVs under $1,000 because that's really where the mass market is. And I want to make sure that that we address that. The magazine tends to look at somewhat higher end products, generally speaking, because it's really aimed at enthusiasts. But the website, I want to be more for the mass market. And so the answer is, yes, we are doing it, and we will continue to increase the amount of low-cost products that we review in order to find the gems. You know, I mean, low-cost doesn't necessarily mean poor quality. The Panasonic S30 and ST30 are great examples, both of which can be found for under $1,000 online, or in Best Buy or various other places, and they perform really, really well. We also did a Denon receiver, the AVR 1612, which lists for $350. Definitely worth it. Definitely worth it.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm a value type shopper. I mean, I mean, I like the best like anybody else, but when it comes down to it, the biggest bang for your buck, what can you get there? And you can buy a heck of a lot of AVR for $400 these days. A lot.
Yeah.
But better than what you could have bought 7 or 8 years ago for $2,000 as far as features go and everything else. And that's the one benefit of the bad economy is the manufacturers realized, hey, if we want to sell these things, we're going to have to put more features in them in order to do that. And so we as consumers have benefited from that.
Yeah, exactly right.
Hey, Scott, the Hitman asked in the chat room, what is your opinion of older films that weren't made for Blu-ray that have been remastered as opposed to a new movie made for it?
Oh, excellent question.
Yeah, this is one of those questions where people say, well, how can you take Gone with the Wind and make it HD? It wasn't shot in HD. Well, if a film was shot on 35mm film or 65 or 70mm, right. the effective negative rate or the pixel rate of a 35mm film is about 4K. So it really is the Telecine process where they scan that through a machine. It depends on what they end up scanning it at. For a while, we were seeing 2K. Then we're seeing 4K. And some things we've seen as high as 6 and 8K. I believe Wizard of Oz was done at 8K.
Right. And in fact, I know for a fact that Lawrence of Arabia, which is being restored now by ColorWorks at Sony Pictures Studios, was also scanned at 8K.
Yeah, and you take an 8K scan of a 35-millimeter print, you're going to see everything that was there and more. it really is amazing. You take a look at The Wizard of Oz or Gone with the Wind or Citizen Kane, any of these classic movies that have been scanned in the Blu-ray, and they have looked probably better than they did when they were in the theater in the 1940s or 30s, whenever it was released. Right. So I definitely think it's worth it. And we talked about Star Trek earlier. Star Trek was a 1960s television show that looks absolutely fantastic on Blu-ray.
And the reason is they shot it on film.
They shot it on film, which, you know, we get back to The Next Generation. They shot The Next Generation on film, but they did all the video effects, all the special effects on video.
Right.
And so they're having to go back and redo all those special effects in high def, which is fine. I mean, us Star Trek guys are going to love it. And we'll probably buy the sets at $80 a season or $100 a season or whatever they end up being. So they can, you know, make money yet again on that property.
Yeah. Well, Aaron B. Is getting back to the streaming debate. And he's saying if he has a home theater, even a modest one, no streaming media comes close to delivering the experience of Blu-ray. Or even a DVD. Do you find I'm nuts? No, I don't find you're nuts.
No. The only thing that would come close to DVD quality and actually maybe a little bit better is the Vudu HDX, but you have to have a 6 megabit minimum, higher is better, into your right. house. The Vudu HDX on a 50-inch display looks really, really, really good. On a 88 or 90 or 100-inch display, no. I mean, that's where Blu-ray truly shines, and it's going to shine through because, you know, the pixels are just that much larger.
Right, exactly. It's true that when you the larger the screen, the larger the image, the more flaws you'll see, whatever they happen to be.
Correct. But, you know, like I said, there's a place for streaming. I mean, do you need the utmost quality in watching a romantic comedy? Probably
right.
not.
Yeah.
You know, Netflix is probably the best or most popular streaming service. They probably, I mean, they don't look great. Even their highest HD feeds do not look HD. They actually look worse than DVD, in my opinion.
Yeah. CES is right around the corner, Beatmaster comments, and he's right about that. What are you hoping? You're not going to CES, are you?
No, I'm not going to CES. I have a day job that requires my attention, unfortunately. You get all the fun.
I get to go have all the fun. What have you heard of? Anything in particular you're hoping to hear about more about or you're hoping for me to cover?
Probably the one thing that I want to get a report back on is the LG OLED display, the 55-inch display, and I believe Samsung may have one as well.
Yep.
I want to know how good it looks, how light it is, how well it works, and when are they going to come out with a 100-inch version? Whether we can all afford it or not. I mean,
yeah, I did see a question earlier that asked about whether or not the LG OLED was going to give the Sharp Elite, the new Sharp Elite, a run for its money.
I hope so. I mean, competition is always a good thing. And so if we competition in that arena and, you know, we need the well-heeled folks to buy a lot of OLEDs to where they drop in price to where us regular guys can afford them.
Right, exactly. I have every expectation that a big screen OLED is going to give the Sharp Elite certainly a run for its money as to whether or not the OLED will be even more expensive. Now, the Sharp Elite is very expensive. 60 inches, $6,000, and the 70 inches, $8,500. And the rumors I've heard, LG has not said anything about the pricing, but the rumors I've heard have been a 55-inch OLED for $8,000.
Right. Which is probably, I think, a little high, but a first generation, that's, I mean, if you look at your cost per square inch versus the 11-inch Sony that was out a few years ago, it's actually a bargain.
Exactly.
you know, it's whether they can get that technology into mass production.
Exactly.
Keep the quality up. I'm really hoping that they can, because that could be revolutionary on a lot of fronts. One, black will be black.
Black.
Yeah, and you could have a razor thin TV that can hang on the wall easily without getting two burly guys in to hold it up while you clamp it down.
Right.
it just, and the energy usage is minuscule, very, very small versus even the energy efficient TVs we have today.
Yeah. Yeah. Deus Almighty makes a good point. 4K will be distributed on hard drives or maybe thumb drives.
Potentially. I mean, I always wondered that if they, you know, we have the little camera memory cards, 32 megs of camera memory card.
32 gigs.
32 gigs on that card. Well, you could fit a lot of Blu-ray movies on, you know, 30 gigs.
Yeah, exactly right.
That's why, you know, we try and say, you know, this, everything will change. When the CD came, it was revolutionary because it took a, you know, an LP and shrunk it down to 5 inches or 5 1/4 inches. Yep. Then DVD came, you know, versus the VHS or Laserdisc, you know, that were huge. So, you know, who knows what's going to happen the next 10 years from now. And, you know, we just have to keep buying electronics so the manufacturers can make a profit and invent new stuff for us to buy in the future.
Exactly. Knox Harrington asks, or he makes a comment, I think, some people complained about the Godfather Blu-rays because they looked so bright, but people were just looking at it from transfers from old film. What do you think of the Godfather Blu-rays? I haven't seen them.
I think they look great, especially compared to the non-remastered DVDs of them. You know, Richard Harris did the restoration on those, and I trust him as a you know, a restorationist, and he says that they look how they're supposed to look, and I take his word on it. I think they look great. They're kind of dark films in a way, in the way they were shot in the 1970s. A lot of 70s films have that kind of dirty look to them.
Right.
Maybe dirty isn't the just kind of somber, I guess, would be a better way to say it. A lot of
That was a stylistic choice, I think, right?
Exactly. It was very stylistic for the times. But I think The Godfather looks great. I mean, even the worst Blu-ray transfers generally look better than their DVDs. There's been a handful of cases where some have not. But for the most part, any Blu-ray is going to blow away what you can get in any other medium.
Yeah. Jim Four asks, what's a good surround receiver and what do you recommend on the sub as far as a subwoofer to get?
Depends on the price.
Yeah, well, that is always the first question. So, Jim Four, if you can post what kind of budget you're looking at. I would say, generally speaking, in the $500, $600 category range, I generally recommend either the Onkyo TX-NR609 or the Pioneer VSX 1021. Those are $600 and $550, respectively. Both of them have automatic room correction. The Onkyo will correct for 3 different listening locations, the Pioneer only 1. But the Pioneer will EQ for the subwoofer, which the Onkyo will not.
Right.
So that's kind of a big deal, if you ask me. Plus, the Pioneer has Apple AirPlay in built in. So if you're into,
they're starting to integrate those in this year's models, right? The AirPlay.
Right. Yep.
Okay.
Exactly. Now, as far as a subwoofer is concerned, well, HSU. It's actually pronounced some different way in Chinese. Shu, I think, or so. It's named after the guy who started the company. He was a Chinese engineer and a really, really good one. They make excellent subwoofers, many of which are pretty value oriented. What sub do you have?
I use an SVS cylinder sub.
Also a good value.
Yeah, very good value. I mean, I've had it in my system for, oh gosh, probably 8 years now, which is probably my longest serving component. and it works great. At some point I'm going to add a second subwoofer to the room. But you know, again, the wife acceptance factor on that is not real high. So that's a slow moving target to try and get that one.
we're just about out of time, but Beatmaster asks, which media player do you use? Roku, Western Digital, Boxy?
Actually, I have a Squeezebox Touch. As far as video streaming, I'll either use a PS3, an Xbox 360, or my Oppo BD player.
And the Oppo will do some good streaming there too.
Yeah, it'll do Netflix and it'll do Vudu. I don't stream that often because I don't have a lot of time to stream because I watch so many movies. When I do stream, it's mostly because I'm reviewing a component and I need to test the streaming quality out on it.
Right, right. Well, we've come to the end of a fascinating hour. I sure appreciate you joining me on this, the first Home Theater Geeks of 2012. Thanks so much, David.
No problem, Scott. Thanks for having me.
You bet. Now, you can read David's stuff on hometheater.com, my website. He does the Ultimate Demos blog. So if you're looking for a Blu-ray that will really demonstrate the best that your system can do, that's a great blog to check out. He also reviews components, AV receivers. He's just done a bunch of those, and Blu-ray players and streamers and everything else. So look for him on hometheater.com, as well as look for me. You can also email me at scott@twit.tv. And you can follow me on Twitter at htgeekscott. Next week, I'll be at CES, and I will be roaming the show floor with Leo Laporte, not on Monday, but on Wednesday of next week. So watch out for that special edition of Home Theater Geeks. It'll be 2 hours long, and we'll be walking around the floor. Among the most interesting things I think you will see on that show is the LG 55-inch OLED TV, which we'll be talking to someone about. And I've arranged an interview with Alan Parsons of the Alan Parsons Project and many, many other very famous musical projects, who is going to be at the DTS booth with Elliot Shiner, a very well-known recording engineer, to talk about what's new at DTS, plus a bunch of other stuff and the excitement of CES. So I sure hope you will join me for that. Until then, geek out.